the top players and legends to the very best analysts around the world from wherever the beautiful game is played. This is BTP. Now, we're talking football.
Welcome, everyone, to Beyond the Pitch. And, man, I am so excited about this one because this has been an issue that's really haunted the world of football the past decades, if you will. I'm with none other than one of the, I guess, premier journalists in all of African football, the great Michael Odiaje. And Michael, again, thank you so much for being on the show. I know you're super busy, especially after what occurred. We're recording on Friday, and of course, everything that happened just in the last 12 to 15 hours, you are absolutely busy. Welcome.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here, Jordan.
Yeah, hey, let me ask you, first of all, how was the eventual suspension of the president of the Ghanaian FA, Mr. Ncheke? How was that such an impact directly related to how this investigation that was done just a few months now, and the impending documentary that came out, how did that come through?
Well, I think what happened was that investigative journalist, a man called Anas Aremia Anas, so he basically went undercover a bit to prove what he says was high-level corruption within Ghana football. The investigation was twofold. They dealt with referees taking monies before games in violation of FIFA rules and the rules of the Ghana Football Association, as well as the Confederation of African Football. And then he also went undercover in a bid to try to prove that the president of the Ghana Football Association engages in kickbacks when he is working for sponsorship for his own organization. In one of the videos, Mr. Nyantichi is seen to be packing bags of money into a black polythene bag given to him by the man he thought was an Asian businessman interested in investing in Ghana football. Mm-hmm. The money, the investigative team said, was $65,000. And when you watch the video, he's told this is shopping money. Before this, he had discussed in great detail how he thought it was possible to set aside a company that would take 20 to 25% of $15 million, which was supposed to be an investment from the businessman he was dealing with into Ghana football. So effectively, the president of the Ghana Football Association was happily discussing how he could put aside 25% of sponsorship money to be given to his own organization. Now, the journalists did not just stop from screening the findings of this investigation to literally the whole Ghana. It was on show at the biggest auditorium here in Ghana for 2 days. Screening three times a day, peak period, so 3 p.m., 5 p.m., 8 p.m., as well as 10 p.m. So there were actually 4 screenings, and about 12,000 people went through to the venue to see it during the period. And he wasn't just happy with that. He then gave FIFA a petition requesting, through his lawyers, that Mr. Nyantichi, based on his findings in the investigation, was not fit and proper. So he appealed to the FIFA Ethics Committee.
Yeah.
And today the FIFA Ethics Committee said that they were suspending Mr. Nyantichi in the interim for 90 days, potentially up to 135 days whilst he looks into the matter.
Michael, look, what also the big impact of it is not just the suspension of Kwezi Nteche, but also the dissolution of the Ghanaian FA by part of the Ghanaian government. Has FIFA mentioned anything to you or to Anas or any of the other journalists in Ghana about the potential consequences that may lie there? Or because of this suspension, there might be some type of normalization committee coming in to kind of reassess and reorganize things? Is that a possibility as well?
That is a possibility, but I think when you look at the reports yesterday about a dissolution, the government of Ghana was very clear in the statement that it is taking steps to dissolve. So I don't think it's written to FIFA yet that it's dissolved the organization. It's not stopped from the executive committee of the GFA has met today. But the government is very clear that it wants to chart a new path for Ghana football. the rest of it then will depend on whether it will chart this path with the executive committee of the Ghana Football Association. Now, to explain that, the executive committee is it's a 23-member body. That's like the exclusive body that makes policy decisions. So it's a bit in the equivalent of the corporate world, your board of directors. There is an emergency committee of the Ghana Football Association. That's a bit like the executive. That's a bit like the day-to-day management of the GFA. Now, all these committees, the executive committee is voted for. The emergency committee is picked from the executive committee. But the emergency committee is handpicked by the president of the Football Association after the laws were changed recently. The vice president of the Football Association is picked by the president of the Football Association. He sacked that vice president a month or two ago. Now, all this means that there could potentially be a leadership crisis, and also because about two to five members of the executive committee were caught on the video. In one case, one of them accepting money and stuffing cash into his jacket to pull up of a player to the national team. So a lot of people who are touched by this investigation, it's not just Mr. Nyantichi. It's touched people who appoint referees, people who call up players into the national team, people who make policy decisions, people who have to look to their stature. So there are many, many people touched by this. Yeah. Whatever the case is, the government of Ghana knows that it cannot on its own decide to dissolve the Ghana Football Association. And my suspicion is that what will happen is that it will put pressure behind the scenes and get the Ghana Football Association to do its bidding. Because regardless of how much FIFA puts into Ghana football, and it puts in a lot of money there, Football Association headquarters was built by FIFA money. The Ghana Soccer School of Excellence, where the various junior national teams train and prepare for tournaments, was provided for with funding from FIFA. So FIFA has a big stake here, but government is an even bigger stakeholder. And the extent of public disaffection and anger means that government cannot just sit back and allow this to go on. So my suspicion is that they will find a way forward without government being seen, at least by FIFA, to be taking the lead in this.
I'm here with Michael Odiaje over in Accra. Oh, you're in Accra, right? In Accra, correct?
Yes, I am.
Oh, okay, I just want to make sure. I didn't want to say you're in the wrong city. Going back to what you just said about the fan displeasure, and that was something that was mentioned in Anas Ademayo's his documentary about how low the attendance has been because of the displeasure that fans are sensing in Ghanaian football. In terms of what, all of these allegations and alleged, and not so alleged anymore because it's pretty much on video. I mean, is that one of the big things that really set this investigation rolling as far as that's concerned? I mean, the disappointment from fans and also all of the other acts of corruption that were, being talked about as supposition and finally confirmed?
Well, I think it was when you look at Anas, when you look at the way the documentary went, this was a journalist. To give you a bit of a background about the journalist himself, so he has been a journalist for the last 20 years. Mm-hmm. He specializes in high-level investigative journalism. He investigated in judiciary at the highest level and found high-level judicial corruption. He was commended by President Obama during a speech here in Ghana when he visited. Yeah. When he was president of the United States, he was commended. But President Obama said for daring to put his life on the line in order to bring out the truth that other people seek to hide. He investigated a customs exercise and preventive service and the corruption that went on at the ports of entries of Ghana, especially the shipping ports. He investigated the biscuit factory here that was basically using rotten material to prepare biscuits for people. Mm-hmm. He's investigated the mental health system here and the incredible abuse on there. He's investigated children's homes and how owners of children's homes basically take everything, you go there, and they never give the kids anything. So he specialized in rooting out some of the biggest ills in society. He said that one of the reasons that got him, you mentioned the fund insufficient, that was part of it, but he also said he had looked long-term at the way football was run and listened to the complaints of sports journalists and decided it was time to act. A lot of the things Anas sought to expose in the documentary were things that other journalists, especially in the sporting fraternity, had spoken about openly, but had been rebuffed on a regular basis by the Football Association because they said that we just didn't have the evidence to be able to back up that. What Anas did was to set out to find the evidence to prove that at the highest level there was corruption, that there was bribery of match officials, that too many games were played behind the scenes, that the referee appointment system was flawed, that there were the poor kind of referees being picked. And in that sense, he did that absolutely brilliantly. So it was a myriad of factors. He just had seen and observed, and as most people had, that there was something wrong with Ghana football. And he set out to prove that a lot of this was correct. And I think in many ways, he got it spot on.
Yeah, it was one thing you mentioned in that last response that you gave me. It was being mentioned openly by many journalists in your country, but then there were reprimands from the FA in terms of what was being, you know, as far as, hey, you know, hush, do you have any evidence? All right, be quiet. You know, were there any actual reprimands, like saying lack of access credential wise, you know, forcing an entity or media outlet to pretty much fire a journalist for saying that? Were there actual types of reprimands like that as well during this time, as far as those types of allegations or accusations without, you know, proper evidence?
Well, there were a few instances where a few journalists were not exactly welcome at press conferences of the Football Association, but it was never official.
Yeah.
Except that those of us who cover had a fair idea of who was welcome and who was not welcome and all that, but it wasn't the most visible of things. It was a few most recent cases, a journalist called Patrick Oseajima, most people here refer to him as Countryman Songo, has a radio program with a huge following, and he, on a regular basis, since the 2014 World Cup, has been speaking and insinuating on a regular basis that Mr. Nyantechi, the president of the Ghana Football Association, was involved in corruption. Now, Mr. Nyantechi took him to court. He took the media house he works for multimedia broadcasting to court.
Yeah.
Mr. Nyantechi has not confirmed that. Nobody has confirmed what we know yet. But we do know that as part of the damages he won for when he filed for defamation against the journalist, the journalist has been off air for the last 3 months as a result of that. The media house tried all its best to protect the journalist, but in the end, the level of the extent of damages that Mr. Nyantechi was seeking was so strong that the media house simply feared that it might overcrowd it. So there's been one case where a journalist basically has not had the freedom to go there. There were about two or three journalists who were facing strong defamation issues from Nyantechi, and all of them because they just didn't have the evidence to back up their claims of corruption that it made so often against the Football Association president.
It's interesting you mentioned that, and we're here with Michael Odiaje, and it's interesting you mentioned that because I happened to be with the Ghana national team while they were preparing for the World Cup. They happened to be down here in South Florida, and I happened to be along. And there was an environment that even some of my colleagues that don't normally cover, much less African football, they don't cover Ghana on a regular, if at any time in their coverage of football, they don't cover Ghana or any other African national team, but yet they all sensed that there was a very weird vibe going on in that national team during those preparation days. I actually happened to be walking in the hotel and being, you know, on the floor where the team was staying during their preparations here in South Florida, and there was a sense of discord. There was a lot of embattlement between the authorities within the executives of the FA and the players themselves. I mean, and now you start to put all the pieces together and it starts to make a little bit more sense what you're saying.
Well, that build up to the Brazil World Cup was strange. The team had moved into the hotel. I think it must have been the Hyatt in Miami at the time. And
yeah.
And that movement had been triggered by a certain discontent with the hotel they had been given initially. There was just this wrong vibe with the team in the build-up to Brazil. A lot of it because the players didn't feel that the authorities were putting the monies they were gaining from the World Cup to right use. the players had problems with some of the commercial engagements they were supposed to be involved in, and they just didn't like it. They thought there were too many people around the team. And in many ways, that Florida trip was the beginning of the problems for Mr. Nyantichi. He left players badly unhappy. He exposed a lot of gaps in the way football was administered, and we saw it all blow up in Brazil. But it's taken 4 years for it to blow up properly in his face, because after the World Cup in Brazil, he came back to Accra. He's a master political player. He found around it. And it's only now that we're beginning to see the full extent of days like what you spoke about then.
Michael, as far as the disaffiliation of Ghana, of the Ghana FA, how does that affect in the short term, or is it too soon to really get a proper measure on that? How is it going to affect the league, or how can it affect the league in a long-term basis? How can it affect the national team? But more importantly, how is it going to affect their vote in the upcoming World Cup bid, which is something, at least on this side of the world, that many are really keeping a close eye on, it, and some even keeping tabs as far as who's voting for the U.S., Canada, and Mexico, and then who's voting for Morocco. And that, again, really can tilt the scales ever so slightly in one direction or another.
Well, I think it means that if the Ghana Football Association, I think my reading of it is this. If government says the Ghana Football Association is dissolved, FIFA does not recognize that. FIFA will not recognize that the Ghana Football Association is dissolved, which means that either the president of the Football Association, who is temporarily banned, or the general secretary can't vote. So my suspicion is that our votes will stay. It just may not be Mr. Nyantichi who will cast the votes. So I think that World Cup votes potentially will stay. The GFA has issued actually a statement on Twitter not long ago about match officials for Women's Cup game later this weekend. So it is going about business as usual. I think the league will go ahead. But in the long term, the national teams and everything, and I think it is just the potential disruption to everything that happens here that will force government to take a back seat and decide that they will not do this. The under 17 women's team, the under 20 women's team have been preparing for tournaments in Uruguay and France. And if government insists on doing this, FIFA will insist on an international ban. A lot of these girls, some of whom study in the United States, and some of whom are hoping to use these tournaments as a springboard to high schools in the U.S. and colleges, will be left off the hook. And I think government will effectively decide that that may be a too big a price to pay for trying to sanitize the Football Association.
Michael, I mean, of all the findings that Anas Aremayawa Anas, and of course many journalists like yourself in Ghana, have found, not just in your own country, but in Africa itself, are you seeing that it's not just obviously one country an issue or a continental issue, if you will? Have you seen that there might be involvement from other areas of the world? I mean, obviously, one of the ways that, you know, that we did end up seeing how Kwasi Ntechi ends up getting caught is by a potential investor from coming from the outside, interested in putting in some money into that league or into that national team or into that FA, I should say. Have you seen any connections from elsewhere, or still this is just like the first layer that's come off, or even the second?
Well, this is a bit like the first layer, but this is only the first layer with evidence. Now, Anas's investigation just didn't focus on Ghana. There were referees involved in the West Africa Football Championship that happened in one of the Ghanaian cities, in a coastal Ghanaian city, where he bribed match officials from Gambia, from Ivory Coast, from Burkina Faso, and the rest. So this has implications beyond the borders of Ghana. A Kenyan assistant referee, I've forgotten his name, is not going to the World Cup again because he accepted cash from Anas during the Championship of African Nations in Morocco in a documentary for the BBC World Service. So he just didn't focus on Ghana. He did a few things. But I don't think the extent and involvement of other African countries is great enough to generalize. I think that what you can say definitely is that there has been rumors and suspicion that these things do not happen just in Ghana. What we do know for a fact, though, is that it's the one in Ghana that has been proving to such an extent. And it will be interesting to see what happens beyond the borders of this country.
Man, this is such a fascinating topic, and when I got to see the interview, it was just Wow. I mean, one of the most, and I don't want to spoil it too much, but to me, one of the most powerful moments of that documentary was when Anas ends up going into the room with his lawyers and the faces on them. It was like, wow, this is some really serious shit right here as far as what's going on, because you see their faces and they were just like mesmerized. They're in complete disbelief. They thought that, well, okay, fine, this is gonna be serious, but when you see their faces, they're like, oh my God, this is really bad.
You should have seen the faces of everybody at the Accra International Conference Center on Wednesday when it
Yeah.
exploded. I had people who were literally shivering. There were
Oh,
moments
man.
when I buried my head and looked on the floor because I just couldn't believe. You hear a lot of these things, but seeing the images of referees, money's changing hands, some of the stupid things the referees were saying, some of the things the president of the Ghana Football Association said. I was particularly struck by how he was arranging to skin his organization of monies between 20 to 25%. I mean, I just couldn't believe it. It was, I think, shock does not convey the message. People were embarrassed. People felt sorry for Ghana football. And Anas's mentor in journalism, a gentleman called Kwaku Bako, in the build-up to this, said, "This will shake the very foundations of Ghana football." And I think even that didn't do justice to what we saw. He also said that the damage to individual reputations and the rest will be irredeemable. And every one of those terms you doesn't even describe it. It's a scandal, as I mentioned on Twitter, of unimaginable proportions. And I think the big thing now is how Ghana football then can be able to proceed from here.
Okay, and how do you proceed from here? Because you could take it from this perspective, yeah, but then you can also look at it, and some individuals would even look at it as entrapment, pretty much. That's pretty
Well,
much how you could take it. I mean,
I've heard the argument about entrapment,
yeah.
but I've also said that entrapment is designed to test your integrity, to test your loyalty to a cause. If a referee can't pass an integrity test, the referee is not good enough to lead. If the man who leads the Ghana
That's
Football
true.
Association can't pass an integrity test, think whether he is prepared to take away $1 million from the company's earnings, he's not fit enough to lead.
Yeah.
So I am not interested one bit in focusing on the means by which I'm asking by this information. I am
Yeah.
interested in the fact that he exposes some of ridiculous characters in the game. I think there will be bans for a lot of the referees, a lot of the Football Association officials will disappear from the system. And I hope that going forward long term, this will mean that we get better officials and we highlight the strength of institutions over creating demigods in the running of football, because that's part of our problems. We made Kwesi Nyantakyi too powerful, and I think what we saw from the documentary was that he took his powers too literally and was
Yeah.
beginning to try to dictate everything in Ghana. And the good thing from this documentary is that it cuts everybody to size and allows us, basically puts us back in 5 3 seconds and allows us to start from scratch again.
I hope, and I really hope that that does happen. And you know what, Michael, I'd love to be able to have you on again in the near future just to kind of get a follow-up of how things are playing out. Because this will definitely be one of the big stories next week. I mean, we're what, 6 days away from the World Cup? But the day before, and maybe a couple of
Yes.
days, before that, that will be one of the big talking points in Russia before, when as soon as they start selecting or they find out who the next World Cup host for 2026 will be. And of course, all of that's to be decided. This will be definitely part of that conversation. Michael, what are you going to be doing as far as this is concerned? Are you helping promote? Are you going to have anything additional following up? Is there anything else that you're going to be doing?
Well, I'll be doing mostly a lot of TV work, a lot of freelance jobs, following up the story for a few organizations, Kwese, ESPN, for the BBC World Service, for TV3 Network, who I work for in Ghana here. So I'll be keeping an eye on it across board, and naturally in these days for a fairly large Twitter following.
Yeah, no, just a, I mean, it's yeah, it's pretty large from what I've seen. So, but you know, and also it's been a pleasure to be working with you guys. You know, the couple of times that I've been at over on Quizzy, and look forward to that as well. And again, I want to have you on, as you know, in the coming weeks to follow up on what's going on in Ghana. And best of luck with this. I mean, and also congratulations to you, to all the Ghanaian journalists over there that have been really looking to bring this story to light, and of course, to Anas, who really, I mean, he just really ripped the door right off of this case, that's for sure. Congratulations, and thank you so much for being on the show. I don't want to hold you up anymore because I know you were like extremely busy with TV appearances. So thank you so much.
And thank you for having me. All the best.
Michael Odiaje here on Beyond the Pitch. Thank you so much for joining us.